Welcome to the OnTrack podcast, a podcast where we talk with ag and construction professionals to find out how they keep their business on track. I'm Tori Weaver, Director of Sales for Ag and Construction.
And I'm Alexandria Johnston, National Sales Executive. Joining us today is Bill Miller, President and co-owner of Two Wheel Holdings Incorporated, which is the parent company of the Arkansas-based dealership Grassroots Equipment and Outdoors. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Let's kick it off with a little brag sheet, because personally, Tori and I think you're a pretty neat guy. So to start, your family was named the North Central District Farm Family in 2003. You've served as the past president of Arkansas Forage and Grassland Council. Grassroots Equipment and Outdoors was recognized with the AGCO 4-Star Dealer Excellence Award in 2019, 2020, and 2021. And this is all coupled with multiple dealer growth awards on top of being a Cub Cadet Elite Dealer, Steel Elite Dealer, and receiving the Exmark 25 Club Award over 2018, 2019, and 2022. What's kind of running through your head when you hear all of that and those accomplishments?
Well, it's a testament to the people that I'm fortunate to work with and have as employees, because they have the same vision and drive and directive that, you know, I kind of have when I came and started this business with my good friend and partner Heath. So I would say it's the people that we have as employees, and we consider them family.
Yeah. Well, going off of that,
go ahead, Tori.
Going off of that, I mean, that is a huge part of why we enjoy working with you, is that it's just been a breath of fresh air getting to know kind of your culture and your company and how you run your business. And it's very similar and aligns with how we do ours. So we're going to take a step back and look at how you kind of started that professional journey and how you got to this point. With your bachelor's degree from Arkansas State University in animal science, this followed your upbringing on a family-owned poultry and cattle operation. Tell us more about that journey and what helped you transition into the equipment world.
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I felt like it was just an automatic that you had to go to college in that time period. And so, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I'm 53 today and I still don't really know what I want to do when I grow up. But agriculture has always been a huge part of my family and myself, and so it just kind of seemed as a normal fit to transition and get an agricultural based degree. I tried the University of Arkansas. It was a little bit too big for my small town lifestyle, so I sat out for a few years. Had some grandparents that went through some serious health problems. We lost them due to cancer, but it transitioned as a period of time for me to help my dad move from helping to care for them to helping him on the farm, which I eventually kind of assumed the leadership role and tried to grow. We had 6 poultry barns in this part of the world. We raised breeder pullets for an integrator, and then we had backgrounding operation for stocker calves. Transitioned a lot of that to intensive grazing management with grass management and renting some other neighbor farms. And so those things coupled with haying, we harvested fescue seed. We did a lot of other things. My younger brother was part of that. And, you know, as we grew to a point where, you know, it became, we had to make some changes through some of the mad cow, you know, we got to ride that roller coaster. A lot of things went on the farm, and my brother eventually relocated and married, and then it was just me and dad. And then I transitioned off the farm in 2006, went to work for my then father-in-law and managed the John Deere dealership here locally.
That feels like a huge change. What sparked the opening of Grassroots for you?
Well, in the world of the equipment business, larger companies tend to consolidate, and we're still seeing that today. My first John Deere meeting I ever went to, we were told in that meeting that a third of us would be gone in 2 years and another third would be gone in 5 years, and they've held pretty true to that. So we as a store manager, a local one store family owned business here in the area in North Central Arkansas I live, that store was swallowed up. It was one of the last, if not the last, in the state of Arkansas that was single store family owned. And it was swallowed up by one of the corporate John Deere dealerships. And I'm not a corporate guy. It's not my deal. And I didn't really want to go that path. So, again, not knowing what I wanted to do when I grew up, I reached out to my friend Heath and I said, hey, I think there might be an opportunity here. Massey had reached out to us while I was in the deer business. And my father-in-law at that time, ex-father-in-law, he didn't have an interest. He wanted to retire and I respected that. So I thought, well, I'll have to get a job and talk to the Massey folks and said, will you take a chance on me? And they did. And I'm very thankful and blessed by that.
Yeah. Massey and AGCO Corporate as a whole has been a blessing to us as well in that we've gotten to know a lot of really neat dealers. They have a really cool corporate structure and a lot of people who really understand the industry. So it's really neat to be able to see that coming from the top down.
Well, and I think not to cut you off or anything, but I think the folks at AGCO that I've met from the beginning, even up until today, they tend to have a little bit more grounded approach to the dealership world and to the business. And a lot of these folks are from the areas or the South and they've been on farms or raised on farms and just have a lot of commonality. That's very comforting. They listen. I'll put it that way. I have a voice, and in the other world with the green, not so much. It's kind of a top down approach, and that's really refreshing when I have to say about my folks at AGCO and Massey Ferguson. They've been very receptive and very helpful, and that's nice.
Yeah, that's awesome to have that support at the dealership level. So we're excited about that.
Yes. So I think Tori and I have also like seen too, and like we've talked about, it's a people based business, and that's extremely important. Yes. So you've shared that, you know, one of the main backbones of grassroots is that people buy from people they know and trust.
Yes.
Meaning that customer dealership relationships play an extremely important role in your company culture. You've touched on it a little bit, but can you just dive deeper into this motto and what that looks like on a day-to-day basis with your employees and yourself?
Sure. Well, it's something I learned by, I guess, you know, just being involved in communities and being involved in people and knowing people. And it just kind of hit home when we started this business that we don't have these mottos up on the wall and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's just something that we never felt like that we have to reinforce. We just kind of live it. And, you know, we hire local people that we've known or have gotten to know, and we utilize their relationships to get to know people that they know, and those connections seem to pay huge dividends for us. And we feel like our reputation in the area and in the community is strong because of those relationships. And we truly believe that people buy from people they know and trust. Now, I know there's a lot of other businesses that have a different philosophy, and they may sell, you know, all over and to the masses, and there's not a whole lot of close relational type ties back and forth, and that's fine. We just don't, that's not our zone, that's not our lane, so to speak. We want to know that if they need us, we can help them, and if they're 500 miles away, that makes it pretty hard to do in this business, in my opinion.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think even just in the like recruiting and hiring, it makes it a lot easier. I mean, we all know that the ag industry is pretty small once you start talking to people. And you know, even Tori and I have seen that, you know, within our own lives of both growing up in ag and then just having those connections pay off dividends down the road, whether it's buying equipment or buying animals or, you know, bringing people into jobs. Sure. Because they know people, you know?
Sure. Well, and you know, I mentioned that I was involved in the Grassland and Forage Council some years ago. And, you know, I had no idea that, you know, what I was doing then might have an effect on what I'm doing today. But those relationships, people I haven't talked to in 10, 15 years pop up, you know, folks I went to school with in Arkansas State that I haven't talked to in 10 or 15 years, they pop up, and it's just an easy transition to be able to help those folks. We don't sell everybody what they're looking for in all cases, but just to reconnect, it's really nice to be able to build those relationships and have somebody you know on the other side.
That being said, I think that even the corporations could take that advice from you, in that in the agriculture industry, I think specifically, or even, hobby farms, things like that, people do buy from people. I will pay more for customer service and know that I can trust what I'm walking away with rather than getting the cheapest deal.
Well, we've had some instances with some customers that, the marketplace is very competitive, in our, it's just what it is. And I've had several customers say, well, your guy down the road here, he's got you beat pretty bad. And I'll look at him and I say, yeah, I understand that. If you're buying on price, that's fine. But when you buy from us, you're buying us and we're investing back into you. It's almost like a marriage. We're going to be here. We're going to answer the phone when you call. We're going to respond to texts and emails. We're not going to disappear. And there's a little bit of a price to get to that level. We try to take care of everything. We try to manage our people. We try to have qualified, trained people, and that takes money. And we're going to be a little bit higher in some cases because of those things to support the customer. And some folks you can convince and they understand, and then some folks it's strictly a price deal, and that's fine. I'm not mad at upset you because you buy it at a lower price, but you may not get some of the benefits that we feel like we offer at Grassroots.
Well, and one of the things that I heard recently at a meeting was that some secret shoppers went out and shopped different brands' locations. And one of the comments made was that the Massey dealers had the best vibes when someone walked in. They were willing to educate. They backed their products in a way that they said, we're here for the life of the product. And then they also made the comment that if you're not going to buy from us, make sure that you're buying from X, Y, or Z, reputable brands. I'm not going to push you to someone who is a knockoff or a Chinese made model that's not actually going to last.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really neat comment to hear, was that, if we can't take care of you and we're not what is a good fit, then I want to make sure that you're going to find someone who is.
Yeah, exactly. And I was kidding with you before we went on about the Kubota and you having Kubota products. Kubota's always been a competitor, even when I was selling the green stuff. And Kubota is a formidable opponent in this market because they do a phenomenal job with the product they bring to market, supporting that product, durability, longevity. I mean, they are writing the book, in my opinion, on small tractors, and have for a long time. And that's a testament to the way they, the way they've built their company and the reputation of their dealers. And you've got to hand it to them. They are the one that, kind of carries the mantle, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think one thing, just being in the industry after this amount of time, I've learned it's a lot about dealer relationships and the dealer network you have in your area. So if I had a Bill Miller in my backyard, I would gladly be there. We have not had quite as strong of a Massey and AGCO presence in the state of Michigan, or at least nearby where we ever lived, which made it a little more difficult in terms of parts and service and getting the after help that we would need.
Yeah.
So it's really something else dealer network.
I've said this to customers that were on my property before. They mentioned, well, I can't afford the Massey, or what do you think I should do? And you said something a while ago. I made a point to say to them, it doesn't as much matter to me about a brand as much as it matters to me about the support you're going to have, whatever brand you choose. And as long as you have a good dealer network and availability of parts and a good relationship, I don't really think that brands anymore have as much of an advantage over each other as like you say, the dealers and the support staff to support those products.
Yeah. Yeah. So many of our listeners are dealership owners just like you. And we all know that overseeing the business has been challenging over the last few years. There are things that are unplanned and predictable. With that being said, with a huge shift in how consumers are buying in the last few years and with the consolidation and acquisitions, what are some ways that you as an owner of Grassroots has really kind of kept your business on track and prepared for the growth?
Well, we have obviously partnering with you guys has been a good move for us. The world of digital and online has completely changed the way we do business. We have to constantly stay on top of current trends. And that's something that you guys are helping us do as well. But the technology, the digital, the online, everybody's on their phone. That has changed the way we market. That's changed the way we communicate. We have a texting platform that we utilize, and it's amazing. They told me the numbers when we started down this path of 80% response rate via text versus email, and I'm amazed at how true that really is. We get folks that will respond to a text that won't respond to a phone call, and it's just changed the way we do business. It's completely different. It's 24/7. It's almost 365 days out of the year. And it's just incredible the change that I've seen since I've been in this industry.
Yeah, I will say I am one of those people who would rather respond to a text than a phone call most times. I am that generational age group that's like, yeah, I kind of just want my answer, but I don't want to have small talk amongst that.
Well, yeah. And I respect that. I'm kind of the same way. And at least with a text message, you have some form of documentation or reminder. Yep. I'm terrible. You guys know when we have our check-in meetings, how I'm always late and you have to send me a message. Hey, did you forget? So anyway, having that documentation, I think is probably helpful to everybody involved to see what you've told them, what you've priced or what you're supposed to be responding back to. That's just the world we live in.
Yep.
Don't be too hard on yourself because you're pretty responsive. So don't.
Yes.
You can talk up too bad.
Well, I try to do better, but sometimes I get pulled in a direction that I didn't anticipate. So appreciate your understanding.
Yeah. What does that look like? You know, I mentioned generational change. Have you seen a huge shift in generational change and kind of that younger buyer coming in the door and maybe being more educated when they walk in than someone was previously?
Oh, definitely. So 99% of our customers that come in, and we sell a lot of brands. We sell three different lines of mowers. We sell handheld. We sell cattle trailers. We sell a lot of different products and a lot of different things. And oftentimes that customer does know more than we know or my salespeople know. And I tell my guys, hey, don't use that as an excuse. You still have to stay on top of your training game and have some basic knowledge of what's going on, but there's no way you can know everything that they have isolated on one or two products about that product. You've got to be able to find out where that information is and answer their questions and, be knowledgeable about what you're talking about. And that's something that we work really hard on the training side of making sure that we're, capable of talking coherently with a customer about all the products that we sell. And that also brings to another point, I think maybe you asked, that the clientele that we deal with today is completely different than the clientele that I dealt with in the early 2000s in the green stuff. We don't see in this area the cattle and farmer numbers that we used to see back in that time frame. There are a lot fewer of those guys that are operating, a couple hundred acres and 60 plus head of cattle. A lot of poultry in my area, but we have a lot of people moving to this part of the world that want small tractors, 25 to 50 horsepower. That's completely different than what I was. We were selling 75 to 125 horsepower tractors and hay equipment when I was selling the green stuff, and we don't see that market like it was then. Today it's completely different. It's small tractors, small implements, small properties, and that's the majority of what we deal with.
Yeah, and I think to your point on the salespeople, I think sales has changed so much in that now you're not doing as much of the spec education, you're doing real life application education. You're saying, you're walking in and saying you want this tractor, but let me tell you best uses for this.
That's exactly right. And a lot of the customers that we deal with in that market are not farm people. They have not been around equipment. They've not been around some of the dangers of operating equipment. I mean, when I was selling the green stuff, we didn't make videos, how-to videos, that type of thing. And we have camera equipment, phones, and things that I never would have dreamed that we would have needed that are part of our sales tools to educate customers, show them how to use it, simply show them how to take a front end loader bucket off. Things that we never would have dreamed that we needed to do, we do now for a lot of reasons. And it's just amazing how quickly things have changed and how much different the marketplace is.
Yeah. The day we got a skid steer with the hydraulic remover of the bucket was the best day of my life. I never have to use a hammer to beat one of those arms down again.
Well, I know, back years ago, it was oh my goodness, what a luxury item to be able to disconnect from the tractor seat. My goodness, that's going to cost $1,500 or $2,000. And now you mean it doesn't have that? A cab heat and air. I had a skid steer on the farm in the poultry barns. There was no heat and air in it. And I was thankful that I had the machine, and it was a new machine. But today, if you have a skid steer in those operations without heat and air, it will sit here. I mean, you can rent it, but the retail customer, they want those luxury items, radio, cab, heat and air, out of the dust, out of the material. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. It is interesting how the industry has changed. Well, a couple of questions we ask everyone when we start closing out our podcast is the first one. If you could go back and tell yourself one thing when you were starting your career, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say slow down. Slow down. You don't have to be everything to everybody. You don't have to be everywhere. Slow down, enjoy the ride, get to know people on a little bit deeper level than just this surface. I know who that is, but get to know people, build those relationships. And that would probably be the one thing that I would say is something I would change then compared to today.
Do you have like a specific example of a time in your life where you wish you would have slowed down a little bit in your career?
Well, it would probably be going all the way back to my days on the farm in my 20s and early 30s. A lot of long days. And Tori and you guys, you too, Alex, know you have livestock. You know what the farm life is like. I should have paced myself a little bit more and not tried to get everything done all the time, because you go to bed at night, you wake up the next day, those things plus some more are there to do again. And I wish I had taken a little bit more time to enjoy some things that I could have done versus working 7 days a week, daylight to dark.
We'll both be taking this snippet and handing it to our husbands after this call.
It's just a guy thing, and I know everybody's the same and does it. And I know you ladies, you guys put in a lot of long hours too. So I mean, I know what you're saying, but if you are on the farm and you're in the agriculture world, it's 24/7.
Yeah, slowing down doesn't always feel possible.
Oh, I know. And when I leave my office and I'm out of the office for 2 or 3 days, I think, man, I'm going to pay for this. And you do, emails yep. stack up, paperwork stacks up. But we only get to go around this thing one time.
Yes. Yeah, Tori and I were just having that conversation this morning. Like, can life just relax a little bit? But sometimes, like you shared, it's our outlook and how we view things. And
I hope I think my that's wife awesome. Not look. If my wife's listening to this, I'm in deep trouble, because she's going to say, you said that, but you don't live that. And
Yep.
It's a goal.
Guilty.
It's a goal.
Awesome. So what's some of the best advice you've been given in your career when it comes to leadership?
Man, you guys ask some tough stuff.
Wow.
You know, I think the best advice that I've been given, and it's pretty simple, is just be true. Just be real, honest, and true. My ag co-rep was here yesterday, and he said, you know, there's one thing you can tell about yourself and tell other people. If you never tell a lie, you don't have to worry about going back and fixing anything. You just put it all out on the table. You tell it like it is. You're truthful. Truthfulness and honesty is, you know, that's kind of how I was raised. And that's probably the best advice I could. Just be truthful and honest, even if it's bad news, even if it's what they don't want to hear. Just be truthful and honest, because it's just not going to work the other way. It'll just make a bigger mess.
Yes. Well, we definitely have seen that, you know, that's how your company has been built, and that resonates as we've gotten to know you and your team. We just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to visit with us today and share with us and our listeners your pieces of advice and how you've gotten to where you are today. We're excited for everything that's coming your way for the dealership, for your team, and what you accomplish in the coming years and months. So thank you for joining us and agreeing to do this with us.
Very honored and thankful, and appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
OnTrack is brought to you by TrackTrue, where we are here for you. We're professional problem solvers who use digital advertising and web design to help our clients thrive. Visit TrackTrue.com for more. That's TRACTRU.com.